Broadcasting live.
It's America's longest running talk show on computers. It's Computer America, bringing you the biggest names in technology with guest interviews, new products, and your emails. Listen live at ComputerAmerica.com
on any device around the world.
Email the show at live@ComputerAmerica.com or find us on social media.
Be sure to check out our website for contests, giveaways, show notes, live video stream, podcasts, and more.
You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome everyone into the Computer America Show. We are the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers and technology. Everyone, hey, we hope that you're doing well, you're having a good day, and you are ready for the program. So today on the show, we have the one, the only, Mr. Nathan Evans, managing editor of PopZara magazine, of course, popzara.com, if you want to find out what him and his team of writers are working on, everything from games, movies, articles, TV shows, just anything and everything, and of course, a great podcast that's I'm sure we're also going to touch on as well. That's all things video gaming. So, with that being said, ComputerAmerica.com, it's finally back up and running. We had a good stretch of time there with a lot of technical issues, but ladies and gentlemen, I think we have all of it worked out, and there you'll find everything that we do for Computer America, including articles, reviews, show notes, podcasts, and of course, social media links to keep up to date. Now, let's go ahead, jump right into this, and joining us once again, as I said before, longtime Computer America contributor, and of course, helps us with all the big events, and you know, all around, just a really fun guy to talk to, Nathan Evans. Nathan, welcome back onto the program.
Hey Ben, welcome back. Also, people should know listening that anytime you're talking about tech problems, 50% of them are actual problems, and the other 50% are caused by you. because we tinker with things, we can't leave it alone.
You know, actually, that was what brought my website down for about four days. Was trying to get smart, trying to get something working on the website, and we finally narrowed it down to one plugin on the website, and it took the whole thing down. And so I learned a valuable lesson. If you are having troubles with your website, try deactivating all plugins first, because that seemed to do the trick multiple times. So that wasn't fun.
And well, if I could say one more thing, I don't usually do this, but I wanted to get something out of the way real quick, and then we can move on to nice things. But I didn't want to get lost. But I just wanted to say, I don't know if you had a chance to chat about it, but big rest in peace to Nichelle Nichols, who passed away this weekend.
No, I have not had a chance. Yeah.
Yeah. She passed away at 89 from, I think, cardiac arrest. So,
89 is a long stretch. And obviously, we're talking about the Star Trek actress, Uhura. So, that's that. And, you've mentioned Star Trek on the show before. Of course, it's a great show, but also how innovative it was. Even though looking back we think, oh, it's silly cardboard doors sliding, silly sound effects, and all around it was pretty kind of gimmicky that you look back at it, but also it pushed TV in a way that I think we all kind of benefited from.
Well, it pertains to tech in that during the 70s and during the 80s, she became an ambassador, worked with NASA to help recruit both women of color and women in general to the NASA program. And you look at these people, and I felt like some of them, like even this year with William Shatner going up into space at 90 or whatever. There's a really interesting group of people that help become ambassadors to science and technology. And it's sad that we're losing them, but it's, they accomplished a lot. And Nichelle Nichols was certainly someone who accomplished quite a bit.
Yeah, and absolutely. It's we're going to start to kind of reach that point where the actors and actresses that we kind of grew up with, they're going to start passing, just like every other generation has their actors. Let's just say the past couple of weeks, Nathan, it has not been helpful to be a made man, because a lot of the mobsters and the gangsters are also kind of getting knocked off as well.
That's true.
It's
Tony's revenge.
Yeah, it's pretty
Tony's
crazy.
Revenge.
But I will say that Star Trek in particular, and then we'll move on to everything else that we're doing, but Star Trek in particular, some of the first apps for, let's say, the iPhone, I remember one of the first apps that Craig downloaded was an app that made his phone, his iPhone, look like a tricorder. You know, every so often we'll see, we'll see a headline that says, you know, so-and-so from Star Trek, like, you know, teleporter from Star Trek, the thing that creates all the different food and stuff. So much of what Star Trek, the replicator, yeah. So much of Star Trek, I think, inspired the current generation of scientists and engineers and so on and so forth, that it just keeps coming up. And that's a really, really good thing that, you know, obviously she was a part of.
I'll just say this in regards to Star Trek, or even like the idea of putting, you know, people of color, people putting a black woman on stage, or putting a Russian, or putting a Japanese man, or like you said, putting technology on the screen. It wasn't necessarily that it inspired. It's just what I think it does. It gives ideas a platform, and it shows the normalcy of how things can be if you just treat them in a certain way. Like, a lot of the homages to Nichelle Nichols talked about, like, the first interracial kiss, mm-hmm. and, you know, things like that. Like, that's when I know people haven't watched Star Trek, because that's not really what happened in the episode. But no, it's just like you said, like, it inspires people to see things in a different way. And I think when you have a sandbox like Star Trek, you can play with a lot of toys.
Right.
And I think eventually a lot of them are going to come true, like Craig. So.
Yep. There you go. So let's go ahead and move on from that one. We'll pop that right over here. And of course, let's go ahead and just talk about a number of stories that you sent over. And of course, we have some more, including, it wouldn't be a good show if we didn't bring up Elon Musk and the whole Twitter thing and the state of that. You said, oh God, exactly. But I think we'll go ahead and start with the Gmail one, because, you know, when you send over stories, I use Gmail. I think the majority of the human population uses Gmail. The new look, like, honestly, I didn't realize what was kind of up with it, but I'm actually a huge fan of it.
I'm using it right now because I told you before the show I'm on location. So I have it Gmail open on my iPad, which I don't normally use, but normally I use client software like Outlook or whatever. So for me, it doesn't really affect me, but I got to tell you, so if you're into the Gmail thing, if that's your groove, then it'll be interesting to see what you think of this, because Gmail's, I think their basic design element is to compact everything, make everything simple. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. So what do you think? What's your honest view of the new look?
I'm actually a big fan, because I think what kind of overwhelms me because I'm such an important businessman with a business happening all over the world, that when I open up my Gmail, I get just kind of flooded with different sections and numbers and, you know, all these different topics that get thrown at me. This is much more unified, and everything looked, you know, kind of softer. Now, I will admit, I customize it with, like, a, you know, one of their preset kind of skins that they have, so it doesn't look exactly like their product images, but enough of it changed that, it's almost the way that, like, obviously Apple's been going for a while, the way that Windows 11 from Windows 10 kind of went. Everything is softer, everything kind of like shades of gray, much more homogenous, and I think just a good look, honestly.
It's definitely bubbly. It's definitely cleaner. It's, if you think about it, the design really hasn't changed that much since, what, 2004?
Yeah.
It's been pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that I'm a fan. I like it. They do give you an option to switch back. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you really hate it, if you're like, this is the worst thing Google's ever done to me, which, you know, I would say just wait. But also, you can switch back. You know, there's options in the settings, and you can do that. They also say that the changes, according to the article that you sent, are part of Google's overall new approach to the Workspace suite. So it looks like they're, and of course, they're supposed to provide more unifying style for AI-powered features. Nathan, it sounds like they're just trying to compete with Microsoft, you know, with obviously Microsoft 365 and all. And does Microsoft own Outlook? I think they do, right?
It's their baby. Outlook's one of their primary apps.
So they're trying to turn Google from this, you know, kind of, oh, everyone uses it for free, it's whatever, to this is a serious, you know, productivity suite that can rival that of Microsoft. Maybe
they don't even call it Gmail anymore. They call it Workspace. I will say this. It's definitely geared towards, like, if you think about it, like, if you've ever spent 2 minutes in a Chromebook world, then you know that, you know, Google would like you to filter everything through the cloud.
Right.
And I think having a one-stop shop is what, where they're trying to go. I mean, it's, I don't really think it's anything more complicated than that, but it's, but when Google makes changes, you remember the last time they had a huge change to Gmail is when they tried to introduce their social media element into it. Was it Buzz or something?
And workspace or meetings or something like that. Yeah.
God, there's been so many failed ones. But they try to enter, they try to graph that onto your email. And I think some people rightfully rebelled because email should be a private thing. Yeah. Look, forgive the metaphor, mm-hmm. but email is like the bathroom of the internet. It's like, it's the one place you expect to have a little privacy.
Mine certainly is. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it depends on your content too, but you know what I mean? It's one thing to say like if you're typing medical records, you're talking to your doctor and next thing you know, you're getting a targeted ad for something. Like Cialis or something,
right?
Like that's a little interesting, but I mean, like I said, if you say it passes the mustard, then it passes the mustard.
I mean, Google has something that they really very rarely have on their hands. You know, they have it with their search engine. They have it with pretty much their search engine and Gmail. They don't have to fix it. They don't have to make it usable. They don't have to attract people to it and say, you know, come on, use, you know, Google, you know, Workspace or whatever the social media one was or whatever the Office, you know, suite one was. Like, they don't have to attract people to the service because it seems like everyone's already pretty much roped into Gmail. Everyone's roped into Google. Everyone's roped into Gmail. Everything else kind of up in the air. Later, we might touch on Stadia, which mm-hmm. you know, I still don't know if that's Stadia or Stadia. Because, and good thing, because before I figure it out, it's going to be gone. So fingers crossed. But you know, Google doesn't really have to convince people to use Gmail. They just have to not mess it up. And I don't think this update messes it up. Do I think people are going to be like, wow, finally, you know, Gmail looks perfect. I want to use that now. No, this is probably not going to bring anything up, but it's going to make it look more homogenous with, as the article mentions, their Meet, Chat, and Spaces products kind of closer together. So
I think you're right. And I think like they're in a position where they're so overwhelmingly dominant in this field that when you, like you saw what happened with Instagram last week, when they changed just a few things, people mm-hmm. rebelled against it. It's people sort of, I mean, you and I can think, oh, you and I can look at something and say, this could be better, this could be better, this could be better. But the vast majority of users don't care about something being better. They want to be familiar. You know what I mean? And some would say that's what's held Apple back a little bit with iOS. It's the same. It's basically the same concept and layout. It's been for, my goodness, 15 years?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So who knows? We're outnumbered.
Yeah, and you know, but of course, it's not to say that tech companies can't get it wrong. I mean, you could look at Snapchat and what they did with their UI redesign and everything that they did, you know, to make like, what was it, like the Snap glasses work or something like that? They redid everything. You know, they got review bombed and everyone hated them, but you know, wait 18 months and they're back up to 5 stars in the App Store and everyone loves them again. So it's not like you can ever, you know, you can't pull things back, but this, anyways, Google, as far as that goes, everything looks pretty good there. Let's go ahead and jump on over real quick to PlayStation 5, and then we'll, you know, the one that we brought up before the show here, but PlayStation 5 mm-hmm. and this other article that you have about finally getting, you know, and this may sound like such a basic thing for people who use PC, but for console players, which mm-hmm. is the majority of people who play video games, 1440p monitors. That's pretty cool. You know, that's a good upgrade.
Are you on the 1440p lifestyle yet? Or no?
Oh man, what am I on? I'm on like a double wide, like an ultra.
It's ultra so wide. Weird because what happened is we went from 1080p as standard, and there was this premature jump to 4K. Premature, mm-hmm. and you sacrifice so much. You sacrifice refresh rate. You sacrifice fidelity. You got the 4K. You can't see me doing the finger thing, but you did the 4K thing. But the quality, unless you were like a graphic designer or someone who did like video processing, there was no benefit whatsoever to going to 4K. In fact, it's probably you probably have a net loss. And then somewhere over the last 5-6 years, 1440p became the sweet spot, specifically because it allowed you to have that extra real estate on a screen. but it also allowed you to improve your gaming. Because Ben, you're a gamer to some respect too. I know you have monitors. I don't know if all your monitors match the same resolution and refresh rate. You probably have a mixed marriage.
I would just say that I purchased all these myself, so you know, don't have any kind of loyalty to it. But my main one is a 3440x1440, so an ultra wide Alienware one that I got on a huge discount, which I think I still overpaid for it. And then I was in the situation that you're talking about, where I had, you know, like the first time I got three monitors, I just pulled together like an old Gateway monitor that I had that was one of the first HD ones. It was, you know, actually still pretty good, but I got rid of it. My point is, I had like a 1650x920 or something like that, 900 monitor, and I actually sold or donated or gave away my three monitors, Nathan, so that I could buy three of the same monitors with the same refresh rates and the same resolutions. I just have like a pet peeve about that personally.
Well, I mean, the funny thing is, like, this article, like, a lot of people have been saying the PS5 getting 1440p is great for PC. That's not true at all. It doesn't impact PC people at all. Right. It's the fact that so many gaming monitors now are at 1440p. And the reason this is because if you had a PlayStation 5, let's say you didn't want the a 50-inch TV, a display, or, you know, television display, you were stuck with 1080p, unless you had 4K. So you can go to 4K and get horrible performance, or you could vastly downgrade to 1080p. You didn't have any choice. The Xbox Series, hell, the Xbox One X had 1440p. Yeah. The Xbox Series X has it. I mean, I have 1440p monitors in my house. In fact, I just got a new laptop. I just traded up. Mm-hmm. My laptop is they call it 2K, by the way, but it's 1440p on a laptop. It's crazy. And it's not even a gaming laptop. It's just the real estate makes you more productive. And so I think this is great. But I think Sony's hand was forced. I think what's happening is a lot of their software is getting built-in native PC support down the line. I was talking with our friend Herman about this, and he's wondering if this is going to affect the games immediately, because 1440p is a resolution dip from 4K. So will the developers have to implement it? I don't know yet. I guess we're going to find out.
Yeah, and it seems like a lot of the cinematics for PlayStation, I remember when this kind of happened with the PS5, they were upscaled to 4K. So even games that, you know, that weren't 4K originally, the PS5 would automatically upscale them to 4K if the monitor was set to that way, that kind of thing. You can't really do that, really, with 1440p, because, you know, you have to add more to the left and the right. You can't really upscale what data isn't there. I'm betting there's gonna be a lot of black bars on a lot of games if you play like that, but hopefully the gameplay itself is going to be, you know, better.
I'll just tell you this from experience, because as someone who's enjoyed Xbox consoles and PS4 consoles and PS5, I like playing on my monitor. Like, I even play Switch on my gaming monitor, like 1440p monitor. It does not upscale, by the way, but I have a nice display. My 1440, I have a high refresh rate, everything. 1440p looks a lot better than 1080p. And if you've been stuck with that on your gaming monitor, then your PS5 games are about to look a lot better.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a nice upgrade. It's long, long, long overdue.
It's perfect. Yeah. And it's nice to see that they don't have to, like, you know, kind of wait till the next generation, wait till the next refresh of PlayStation 5. They can just, you know, just push that update out and it's good to go. So that is perfect. I wanted to kind of flow right into the story about, let's see, I had it up here. It was Oculus Quest 2, but also by extension, the PlayStation 5. Mm. And I think the Xbox could be getting consoles and VR headsets are getting a price increase. Nathan, what the heck? These things are getting older. Why are they getting more expensive?
Because fewer and fewer people are buying them. They can blame whatever they want. But the problem is, and I talked to you about this years ago, and it came true, because as Valve is finding out with the Steam Deck, it's really hard to make hardware. And because you don't just make hardware, you can get away with the phone every year because it's subsidized. But when you have a game console, the game console is meant to live in your living room for about 5-6 years. It's meant to be a permanent fixture. It is not meant to be upgraded every year. The problem is that you have companies like, we call them Meta now, but, you know, Facebook, I think Valve makes one themselves. There's all these little imitators. they're treating these VR platforms like cell phones, and they're not treating them like the niche product that they are. Like, you know, our friend Corey just got his Steam Deck a week or so ago, and he loves it, but he was always gonna love it. I asked him what he likes about it. He tells me all the problems. It's too loud. Games don't always work, but despite all that, he loves it because he can tinker with it. You have all the Oculus stuff, I know, and there's so much more to the Meta thing. We probably shouldn't get into it. There's so much about merging, about the companies trying to buy different competing products.
Right.
Of course, you know, there's data, there's just Meta in general. And I'll say this, they're betting the farm on this because, you know, they're hemorrhaging users. Their name was so tarnished, they had to change the company name. There's a lot going on with it. Zuckerberg is no longer one of the top 10 richest men. I mean, the company's gone through a downspin. And VR was not the catch-all they expected it to be when they bought it from Lucker Palmy years and years ago. It's a niche product. Like, VR is niche. It's never going to sell. Like, we just talked about, you talked about the PS5 for a second ago.
Yeah.
Like, Sony's having trouble making a game console. They're having trouble putting a game console in people's hands. You know, they sold, what, 21 million PS4s. Yeah. How many phones did Apple sell less?
Probably closer to like 200 million or 150 million. They always sell
even the most entry level phone is the price of a PlayStation 5. It's a different market. These are completely different markets. And when you're trying to look at the gaming community and you're trying to pin your hopes on that, there's just not the installed base for that. I'm sorry, it's just not going to happen. And I think what they're talking about, the price is going to increase for the same hardware, $100. It's going to go up. So yeah, you're not getting better.
That's a harder
you're getting
sale,
the same
you know?
Hardware.
Yeah,
people don't do that when things are good. They do that when things are bad. You know, and the reason they do that is because you're not supposed to make money on the hardware. You're supposed to make money on the software. It's called the loss leader, otherwise known as blades and razors, right? Is that you yes. sell the razor and then you make the money on the blades. You sell the hardware, you make money on the software. The problem is nobody is buying. The biggest high profile VR release in the last 3 years was a Half-Life spinoff on a competing platform. So I'm sorry. Like, I mean, I have nothing against VR, but these are the wrong people to run it. These are the wrong companies. They don't have the DNA for it. They don't understand how to sell software. They look at it as a way to siphon more data.
Yeah.
And they look at it as a way to do this, and it's not working. It's just not working.
It's also hard to, you know, kind of think which company would actually do it right then. And it's, you know, maybe Amazon has, you know, kind of the right mindset, because it seems like they really don't mind tacking even more value onto Amazon Prime, you know, and maybe that's where like a headset with Thrive or something like that, where they understand the idea of that. But man, if they can't, if these trillion-dollar companies, if they can't do it, who does, you know, who can get VR into the mainstream?
Back in the 70s, a lot of companies sold waterbeds, right? And I grew up on a waterbed,
I'll have you know.
Yeah,
that was my childhood for like 15 years.
But it took a couple years until we realized waterbeds don't belong in the bedroom. And it's not that, and there was no big consensus, like, well, how can we save the waterbed? How can we get the waterbed? Somebody said, you know what, maybe we shouldn't be putting waterbeds in the bedroom. And I think that's kind of the hard question we have to ask about VR, is that maybe we shouldn't be putting VR in people's living rooms. Like, maybe it doesn't really belong, maybe in small circumstances, right? But it's like 3D movies. The theaters are back. The theaters are back. Movies are doing great. Not a whiff of 3D anywhere. People like them 2D. It's just, I'm sure it's cool for somebody, Ben, but there doesn't seem to be any real market for it outside of the niche.
Maybe it's an amusement, but is it enough of an amusement, especially with the price going up? You know,
exactly.
Is it enough to get people there? So, yeah, could certainly be. I mean, you could think of things like escape rooms. They're fun, and hey, you love to go to them there once in a while. But who wants to build an escape room in their house? That's just called a dungeon. Yeah,
it's called hoarding. But I'll say this: there was a story that came out this week about it's news to me, right? But apparently there's this huge community of VR chatters. I guess VR chat's very popular. It's kind of like a Second Life.
Right.
There's even a movie out called We Met in VR Chat. There's a whole movie filmed in VR chat. So apparently VR chat's doing just fine as a niche. But people have created a virtual Kmart. Have you heard about this? they created a virtual Kmart. They recreated a Kmart from scratch, everything about it. People actually cosplay as Kmart workers, and they go in and they sell you products, and then people will look it up. I'm not joking. Kmart VR chat. And people can actually volunteer to come in as shoppers, and you can recreate the Kmart experience in VR chat.
So from what I know about VR chat, it's going to be mainly cat girls that are going to be...
pretty much. It didn't take long.
Yeah. You know, VR chat is a whole nother level of... that is something that is, you know... When you're talking about the core user base, and, you know, they're very dedicated, they love doing it because... It's a platform that they can kind of create and build upon. And I feel like, you know, we just kind of talked about, you know, that being a good thing where you build the system and you let others have fun with it. And, you know, that's really what brings people and it keeps them coming back. VR, I feel like it has a place, but man, right now, the niche community that's there, and, you know, that's your word, but that niche community, it's so niche. It is so far from the mainstream. It's so far from the Call of Duty players. Yeah,
they're so they remind me a little bit of actual gamers back in like the early 90s, late 80s, where they literally have to go through hoops to do this. Have you seen these videos of these people recreating truck simulators?
Oh yeah,
where they'll spend like $20,000-$30,000. It's not quite VR, but it might as well be VR.
Yeah,
because you know they don't want the headset. They just recreate the entire environment. And I think ultimately, as long as you're wearing a headset, it's not immersive. And I think we could spend here all day what's wrong with VR, and we'd sound like we're punching down. I think the technology has a place. I don't think we've figured it out yet.
Right.
But you know, it's like, who would have looked at a personal computer back in 1983 with a keyboard and a mouse and thought this is going to play video games?
Joystick was you know, the next level of gaming, and you know, kind of see which one, you know, kind of stuck around, keyboard and mouse. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right there. So with that being said, PlayStation getting a price increase, but you're saying is that for the same reason, because they're having trouble sale, or is it the chip shortage?
I don't know if I buy the PlayStation going up in price, but the fact is we're even talking about it makes me a little leery. Mm-hmm. The problem isn't Sony's not selling them. I mean, obviously they have a market for it. The problem is they're just not making enough of them. You know, we have to include Microsoft in this conversation because they are of the same generation and they're having a lot of the same problems.
Right.
Truth be told, full disclosure, we actually got my first PS5 in the mail yesterday. Did I tell you this? I finally got one.
Nice.
And it just took 2 years. I didn't have the time. I didn't want to go to a gas station and risk my life. But I got it, and I was like, I wasn't even excited to turn it on. I'm like, oh, what am I going to play? I can't play on my PC. But I'm wondering, like, what's going to be the pull? Because the same weekend, the biggest game of the week this week was a Switch game, Xenoblade Chronicles 3. So it's like Sony has a problem where they're not manufacturing enough hardware. And they're not getting enough software out. That's the problem.
Right.
I was talking to our friend Herman about this yesterday. So the biggest selling game of the generation for the home consoles right now is Mario Kart 8 Deluxe on the Switch.
I did not know that.
I'm gonna get the numbers wrong, but it's like 40-50 million copies sold.
Mm-hmm.
You know the crazy thing? That's the same game that was on the Wii U 10 years ago. They just ported it. On the Wii U, it was the worst selling Mario Kart game of all time. That same game on the Switch is the best selling Mario Kart game of all time. You can't make money on software when there's no hardware to play it.
Yeah.
If, like I said, Sony needs to do something, and I don't think a price increase is going to make a situation any better. It will make it probably worse.
Yeah, and I will say games are a bit different than they were, you know, even 5-10 years ago from the previous generation, because games don't end after you release them. You know, gaming as a service is definitely a thing, even on consoles. Fortnite, Genshin Impact, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, once you buy a game, you play a game, you invest, you know, hundreds of hours into a game, you know, that game is going to keep adding things. So, you know, not having new software to play on these consoles isn't as big of a deal, but also new and exciting games do drive people to buy consoles. So
I will say one last thing about this. Sony has done yeoman's work trying to improve their PS Plus network, their service. they just released, we're going to have a little article on it. I'm sorry, this probably today or tomorrow, so watch for it. You know, it's their version of Game Pass, where you pay and you get so many games a month or whatever. Their marquee game to debut the service was a game called Stray. You know, the game everyone's talking about with the cat.
Yes.
That was a huge game on the PlayStation. It's also on the PC. But the game, you can get the game in 5 hours, 5-6 hours. And people are complaining about that. Oh, it's too short. And I thought to myself, more games like that, please. More nice short games that end. Not the 80 to 100 hour games. No, thank
right.
you.
Yeah, and there's something to be said for a game that creates an atmosphere and a universe and a situation that you play through, like you said, 5-6 hours, and then you're done with it, but you're left with a good memory. You know, that there's something to be said for
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
But yeah, you know, most people do expect 100 plus hours out of every $60 or $40 game that they buy, or even free game that they get into. They expect that. So either way, that's that. Since we're talking about consoles, and then we're going to switch over to some other topics here, but Google Stadia, you know, I'm finding conflicting reports, but there was, I think it was over the weekend, there were rumors that Google would shut down its first party studios. They already did that like last year. They shut down their first party studios for the Stadia, and ever since then people have been wondering, Nathan, when is Google going to shut down Stadia the service?
They may not have to shut it down. It could transform into something else, but as a consumer service, it's not flying. It's not successful. The worst part about it is that it's a decent service for what it does, but the problem is there's so many competing services that do it better, more affordable. I know even Sony's kind of signaled they're now going to license the technology to third parties. I think they had a deal with AT&T where if you became a subscriber, you got access to a Batman game.
Right.
I think the technology needs to be there. I think Microsoft has signaled they're ready to be competitive with their version on Game Pass. They're games for cloud. There's a few TVs coming out that now have it built in as an app. We talked about this many, many times about how I always thought they were going to become a platform for service as opposed to hardware.
Right.
And I think that's happening. Really, I mean, the jury's out. I mean, Sony could keep this thing on life support forever. I mean, they spent so much money on building infrastructure. They're not going to throw it away. This is valuable technology, and it does work. I want to be clear. It does work. The service is decent when it works. Would I buy a game on it? No.
Some of the rumors that were, and it seems like this was just a rumor that was going around, was that Stadia was shutting down, and then of course comes the hard question of, you bought a game on Stadia to play it on Stadia, you did not actually buy the game itself. So do you just lose the, let's say, $500 in games that you bought on the platform, or what happens? Luckily, that question doesn't have to be answered. I did like last time we talked about Stadia, which has been many, many months, with you, Nathan, was that you're right, and Google has a really good platform, and I think we talked about the rumor that maybe Google's like, hey, let's turn this into a service for other people. Let's pull it back from trying to get customers to come to our game or our service, and let's offer this to Microsoft. Let's offer this to Apple. Let's offer this to whoever. Let them use it, and then we make money, you know, doing what we always do, you know, data servers and that kind of thing.
I'll tell you who they need. I don't know the name of the company, but there's a company I think in Europe, and what they do is if you ever played anything, there's a bunch of games on Nintendo Wii that are actually cloud based games, like Hitman 3, the Kingdom Hearts series, I think Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, the Switch can't handle those games. And so what happens is they cloud stream them, and they're terrible. They're really bad. And apparently what happens is third-party companies go to this company and they say, put our games on the cloud, and they do it. I wish Google would offer a better service. I can tell you right off the bat, if it was Stadia powering those games, then they'd run a lot smoother on the Nintendo hardware than they do. They're unplayable in the current form. I think the big game was Control. I mean, do you have a Switch?
I do not. No, fiance does, but I do not.
Next time you're around her, just go into the store and get a demo for one of the cloud games and try it out yourself. It's terrible. They don't work. And they're full price. They're full price. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you can't, that's egregious that they're taking your money for that.
Yeah.
But, I think Stadia, I think GeForce Now, I think Luna, I think all these things, they're a good idea, but like VR, the wrong companies hold the technology. They don't right. know what to do with it. They don't know what to do. And so I like the idea. I told you, Stadia saved one of my editors when he wanted to play Cyberpunk. Mm-hmm. He didn't have a console, so he had a great time with it. He ran great for him.
Yeah,
that's how he played it. And so there's a time and a place for this stuff. And I think, look, streaming is going to happen at some point. Streaming gaming is going to happen in some form or another. We'll see how we get there, but we're going to get there at some point in some way.
There's some fundamental issues with streaming and more so with multiplayer streaming. Single player is much easier to overcome, but the laws of physics kind of have something to say about, you know, streaming games to one another and doing that kind of thing. But I will say it does seem like a good service, and all of the, you know, kind of xCloud and like all the other services I've seen come before, Stadia has been the best. And that's, you know, obviously it's not caught on like I'm sure Google wanted to, but it's still the best option around. So we'll have to definitely see how long it lasts, and it's not killed by Google, you know.
When you have a competing service, when you're trying to enter a crowded market, like we talked about the Nothing Phone and basically what a Nothing Burger is,
yeah.
Like you can't offer a competing service unless there's a marquee feature or a marquee software or marquee function right. at the same price. And whenever I see a competitor come in offering the same price with nothing, I say you're destined to failure. And I think, you know, you have all these services out there that could do so much more with the implementation, and they never do it, and they always fail. And I'm not surprised.
The Nothing Phone still makes me mad. So shame on you for bringing that up. I'm still just irate at that. But that aside, I forgive you this time. So Stadia. Let's see. I have some of these other ones. This one here did not cover it all. I'll let you, you know, kind of introduce the idea, but Meta will no longer pay U.S. publishers for news content. And that, I think, really gets Meta further away from where it was going before, which is, you know, I remember the keynote from Zuckerberg saying, you know, years ago, especially before the 2016 election and that whole cycle that went into the election cycle, was that Zuckerberg wanted Facebook to be the place where people go for news. You know, instead of picking up a newspaper, he wanted Facebook to be that, you know, to be that news source. And this seems to be a step for Meta to kind of go back on that.
He was trying to turn Facebook into AOL. It didn't work.
Because which is so weird, I mean, because AOL was up for sale.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, it's like even Craig tried to force AOL on me when I first started doing Computer America, and I humored him. Sorry, Craig.
You know, we didn't have a chat room and things like that. Yeah, for sure.
But for a lot of people, AOL was the internet. Like you logged on, and you know you got that dopamine buzz. Like, welcome, you've got mail.
You've got mail.
Yes, somebody. Yes. It was exciting. It was exciting. I remember when I had a web TV. You get that little red chirp, like chirp, chirp. You're like, oh, you got email. Like, you know, you need that constant reinforcement. But Facebook hedged their bets that they could be everything to everyone. They could be your Google. They could be your storefront. You never have to leave. It was basically digital utopia. The problem is, no. People said no. It's the only time that works is when you have like guns and barbed wire, like North Korea. And Facebook increasingly became distasteful to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that's the funny thing about this. That's the funny thing. And I don't mean to beat up on Facebook, although I could, is that everybody started to recognize what a scummy company they were and that you didn't have to stay there. You could literally leave Facebook. You could go off Facebook and go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And you could get your news. You didn't have to put up with censorship. And to be honest with you, I blame politics. I blame Facebook playing both sides. They played the left against the right. They played the right against the left. They kept lying. They got caught lying. They tried to cover up for it on both sides. They would tell some donors they would do this. They would tell some donors they could do that. And honestly, Ben, look what's happening in Europe. You have Facebook, you have Google, you have all these publishers are now having to contend with paying for truncated news sources.
Yeah.
Like, you ever go to Google, News and they wrap your, the news story around that AMP bull crap.
Yeah.
And then you have to like get out of AMP because it makes the page load slower. It disentangles content. It ruins your website. Like, I know people who went to Popsara before and they told me that the website wasn't functioning and they sent me the link. It was always an AMP link.
Yeah.
Like, no, don't touch it because they're trapping you. And so, AMP.
AMP is not good, and I do want to say that Facebook and, by extension, Meta, they were, like, the ones who, I think, like, almost, like, in my mind, created the idea of the bubble, the sphere of influence, like, you know, kind of who you let into your circle of friends and news sources and media and things like that. Where that, and Facebook is so much to blame for this, that especially with, you know, paying for their own news sources and paying, you know, paying publishers for this kind of thing, that one person's Facebook was a completely separate reality from another person's Facebook.
Exactly.
And yes. When one person says to me, you know, oh, I read it on Facebook, in my mind, that just means they read it on their Facebook and, you know, let's say my interests were tailored, you know, kind of the opposite way. I would never see that in a million years. Facebook has so much to blame for this, including the news thing. I'm glad that they're pulling money out of incentivizing news publication articles, headlines to be so reactive and just, you know, Nathan, I mean, of course you run Popsara, but you also know the game that engagement is everything. You know, without engagement, there's really no incentive for these people to do anything.
It became worse than that, though. It's like, for example, Microsoft would bake news apps into their Windows platform. It still is. If you have Windows 11, which I do and I like, they've integrated the news app into the widgets app. Can't remove it. So if I want to check my weather, I have to see news.
Right.
Like, I can't remove it. Apple has news baked in. They have news baked in. The problem isn't become... Oh, this is your news reader, which they sold as like an RSS feed, sort of. You can punch your own news sources in. But it became pretty obvious that they were taking preferential treatment towards certain news organizations. And then it became like, oh, okay, like, forgive me for saying this. Well, of course we have CNN. What about Fox? Oh, no, can't have Fox. That's, Fox is terrible. Can't have ONN. Can't have any of these alternatives. Like, you got to have my trusted news source, like NPR, Washington Post. Well, it doesn't take a blind man to see that where this was trending. And then pretty soon, and whether or not you agree with this or not, it became, let's publish news sources, became, oh, let's identify a news source. And then, oh, then this news source became fraudulent news source. And then pretty soon, you're getting tags on news sources. Oh, this is from Russian media, or this is from this. And it became so outside the scope of news. And Google and Apple and Microsoft, and especially Facebook, they became the arbiter of news, and they were criticized when they weren't taking sides politically. You saw what happened during the vaccine debate. You're seeing it happen during the abortion debate. You're seeing this, that Silicon companies are not posting news. They're generating propaganda based on the exclusion of news sources.
Right.
If I want to see something, like, I may not agree with Fox News, but I want to see it so I can make up my own mind. I may not agree with New York Times, but I want to see it so I can make up my own mind. And the moment these companies started policing sources like this, it became impossible to hold on to. You can't do that. It's, you could do that if you're Apple and you're doing apps in a walled garden. You cannot do it with news. And if you think you can, then it's a fool's game. Not going to happen.
And really, it's not just the U.S. I think what's happening in the U.S. is a whole policy shift for the company worldwide, because I remember them being in a lot of trouble in Australia for doing something similar and censoring. And, you know, essentially they were running a news site without having to pay any kind of fees or, you know, be under the same kind of regulation as newspapers in Australia did. So, yeah, this just seems like a pullback. And there you go. So Meta won't be paying publishers for news content. Let's wrap this up, Nathan, by saying, what do you think is going to happen for people who do, and, you know, it's, you know, they thought they could bring news to people. By and large, Facebook did bring news to people. People do go to Facebook for their news. What do you think is going to happen to those individuals that go to Meta or Facebook for news?
There was a study years and years ago where Facebook admitted that they were intentionally putting inflammatory news articles in front of people to test to see if they could change their emotions. Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah.
And it turns out they could. And I remember, I from personal experience, I've seen this happen, where people don't actually read the news on Facebook. They read the headline or they read the excerpt. They encapsulate. And Twitter, to their credit, Twitter put a new feature in recently where Twitter, before you can retweet something, they say, well, do you want to read the article first? Like, they know you didn't read it.
Yeah.
And because people want that quick dopamine hit. They use fake terms like breaking news, even though it's not. They use this because they want to get clout. They want to generate it. Mm-hmm. Whereas Facebook, like you said, your Facebook is probably vastly different than someone else's Facebook, vastly different than my Facebook, because it's been so tailored and tweaked up. The problem, though, is that the problem is what it's always been, is that people don't really read the news. Like, the idea that the news industry was some bastion of clarity and objectivity is bullcrap. It's never been like that. I mean, if you go back to read about the Hearst papers and, you know, the, oh, goodness gracious, I can't even remember right now. Go read the saga of the yellow kid. And you have the competing headlines and the salaciousness and the clickbaits of the day. They started wars. They started antagonism. And you had the newsies out there, you know, on the front lines selling papers for 5 cents and beating each other up. The media was always a competition of headlines. Here's the thing, man. You either have a well-educated populace or you don't. And I think somewhere along the lines, we think that if we could just deliver this to people, they're going to be well-educated. They're not going to be well-educated. At the end of the day, they're going to trust who they trust. They're going to distrust who they distrust. They're going to get their news however they get it. They're going to, you know, racists are going to find a way to aggregate, you know, gender people are going to find a way, masculine people, feminine people, whatever you have, there's a kink for you. Like, and if not, man, you know, the Kmart enthusiast rebuilt Kmart and VR chat. There's always, always a venue if you look for it. And you know what? So be it. Who am I to judge? You know what? You know what? Blue light special, man. So
there you go. Okay. That is your last allowed Kmart reference for the entire show.
Can I say one thing, though? No, yeah. One more. I'll just say this, and with all due respect to my Kmart friends, because I love Kmart when it's went up. But that VR chat with Kmart, that's like a whole bunch of kinks in one.
So yeah.
That's, be careful if you go there. It's not an endorsement.
That is nostalgia after dark, for sure. So there you go. and really, that's just VR chat in general. Just after dark is a good way to describe VR chat. So with that being said, real quick, we can hit on this one. Talking about how Spotify... you know, they've of course made a name for themselves when it comes to podcasting and all that kind of thing. Although I will say, personally, I was not logged into the correct account, Nathan. And I will say that I tried using Spotify without any kind of premium account or any kind of paid service.
I'm so sorry.
That is a useless service. I got one song followed by two ads, followed by two songs, followed by eight ads, followed by one. It was, oh my God, they just hate people who don't pay for their service. Like, they let you use it, but they don't like you.
You know who was good? Google Music was great for a couple of years because Google didn't know what the hell they were doing. And they didn't really clamp down on the fast forwards and the skips. And you could really get a lot of engagement there with new bands and, you know, identity and matching. But of course, it's Google, they screwed it up. Spotify, I pay for Spotify. I actually pay for a family plan. I'm a big fan of Spotify. I'm a really big fan of Discovery because these days all I listen to is I just listen to jazz. It is really hard to find jazz on the radio. So, but I'll say this, Spotify's doing pretty good and their podcast efforts are paying off a little bit. I know the story I sent you tried to poo-poo a little bit of it because forgive me for saying this. This is one of those cases where this should be a tech story. But you can kind of tell the sources you're reading, they have a little bad blood for someone like Joe Rogan being so successful. So they're going to sort of slant it in that direction. But the fact is, Joe Rogan's been very successful for Spotify.
Yeah.
He justified their money.
At least they link the quarter two kind of press kits that they have there and, you know, showing some of the other things that they've done and numbers. I mean, like, the numbers speak for themselves with 433 million monthly active users. And then, of course, almost 288 million, almost 200 million premium subscribers, which again, man, do they kind of force your hand on that one? But still, that is a crazy number of subscribers for Spotify.
Well, Ben, this is a great example of what we were just talking about. Whereas, you know, Apple's had podcasts for years and it hasn't really been controversial because, you know, all Apple did was aggregate them from RSS feeds. But when Spotify started paying for content, you started to see politics enter it a little bit. Whereas, you know, you had people boycotting Spotify because of Joe Rogan's statements. Of course, those didn't really go anywhere. They're all back. But the fact is, like, you had engagements for people to ban content. Like, oh, let's turn this off because we don't agree with this. It's exactly what happened with the Facebook news. It's exactly what happened with social media. It's you want something, but you at the same time, you don't want something. And if you don't want something, then no one else should have it. And that's just not how this works. That's not how society works. If you don't like Joe Rogan, don't listen to him. Just don't. You could say, oh, I have a moral obligation. Well, have your moral obligation in silence. But what I'm saying, though, is...
have your moral obligation in silence. There you go.
Well, but I'll say this, though. Spotify has changed the game in a different way, and I don't want to get into it because I don't exactly know how the metrics work. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Billboard, the way they catalog music sales, has completely bent to the streaming network. They basically count Spotify, iTunes, YouTube streams as sales. So if you actually look at the Billboard charts for music now,
yeah,
I don't know how real it is. I don't know how accurate it is. Like, if you're gonna listen, to Beyonce's album, you're gonna listen to new Beyonce album. You're gonna hit repeat, 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 repeat. You're gonna have that thing on 24/7. You're gonna go to sleep with Beyonce, right?
Yeah.
They're going to count like every couple times you listen. Like if you listen to that thing 40 times, they're going to say you bought it like 10 times, but you didn't buy it 10 times. But
I will say that I think the younger generation and, you know, really just the generation that the Billboard charts and, you know, the metric companies need to really focus on, I think they get their, like, what's popular more from, like, YouTube top 10 videos for the week, for the month, you know, like, just the raw view count of a video is more important than some academy or sales charts or, you know, business model saying this is really what it is. It's like, you know, the listenership and the views are one thing, but then the metrics of it are another. That doesn't matter. It really does feel like, you know, if this has 100 million views and this song over here has 20 million sales, 100 million beats 20 million.
Well, check this out. Like, you had Stranger Things come on this summer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Stranger Things did something that no other TV show has done in 5 years. It turned 30-year-old songs into hit songs. It had Kate Bush's, you know, Running Up That Hill, and it had Metallica's Master of Puppets.
Right.
Neither of those songs have ever charted before. Never. But now, in the summer of 2022, they've sold millions of copies. They made millions, right?
Yes.
And you think to yourself, well, how does that work? These songs were always available. Anybody could listen. I remember listening to those songs 30 years ago. But they're on a TV show. People are like, oh, I've never heard that before. Because for all the wisdom of the algorithm, for all the wisdom of the playlists, they don't seem to have any outside influence. Like, it's just the same thing over and over and over again. And everyone's number one. But when a real song hits, it's like a mega bomb.
It was like the trending video on TikTok where that guy drinking cranberry juice on the skateboard.
I know you're talking about Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just and you know, just from a TikTok trend to another hit, mm-hmm. you know, chart. Mm-hmm. It was that's all it takes.
And it makes me wonder just how accurate the metrics really are, because they don't seem to. It doesn't seem like when I was growing up and you told me Michael Jackson was popular, I could point to like 20 things to show you he was popular.
Yeah.
I could point to Help, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys. But today you tell me Drake has 50 number ones. You tell me Beyonce has like 30 number one hit singles. I can't name a single one. There's no penetration. Like, it's different. And
yeah.
I think they're just looking at the numbers. Like, before we get going, Psy, remember the K-pop guy, Psy?
Yeah.
10 years ago, Gangnam Style came out. You didn't have to tell anybody Gangnam Style was popular. You knew it, right? You knew it.
Yeah, everyone was talking about it.
And,
yeah,
but you know, but you get videos now that get more hits than he ever got. And you're like, but it's just numbers. It's just digits. It doesn't have any penetration in the culture. And you're like, they're selling the same stuff to the same people, and it doesn't get outside their border. And it, I think it diminishes music participation a little bit, mm-hmm. and it on some level, but on another level, like for the Kate Bush and the Metallica thing, it does open up kids to experiencing music that was frankly made before they were born. It's interesting. Yeah.
Again, back to, you know, kind of the Facebook thing where it was like spheres of influence and circles and, you know, mm-hmm. kind of what you, and like whenever there's any kind of mix or, you know, kind of cross across those borders, I feel like it makes a bigger impact, which is why, you know, I guess Baby Shark was like number one, and like that crossed all borders. Everyone's like, great. Now everyone's singing Baby Shark in their head. I mean, it can certainly be a good thing when it does. I will say I experienced, we're going to switch stories here, but I will say I experienced this firsthand when I stopped listening to country music like 5 or 6 years ago. And the moment I stopped listening to, like, you know, the radio and stopped listening to certain playlists on YouTube and stuff like that, like, I never, you know, like, without having to go out of your way to listen to country music, like, I thought, you know, these are big mm-hmm. hits. They're selling millions of tickets. The albums are selling millions. Big stars, big names. If you don't go out of your way to listen to country music, you don't hear country music. You don't hear a song anywhere.
When Lil Nas X had his little Country Road song and it became a huge hit, people rebelled. And then you had to have country stars come in and defend it. It's like, that's what's going to happen. Like, they're breaking out of the... They're breaking out of the metrics.
Yeah, but a lot of people aren't. A lot of people are staying in their little circle. But hey, that's okay. Anyways, back to the point here was Spotify, lots of paid subscribers, lots of listeners. What this means for the future of music. But really, reading the article here a bit, it looks like they're working on audiobooks. So that seems to be their new area of growth. And I know a lot of people that love audiobooks. I'm unfortunately not one of those yet. I think I would love it if I gave it a chance, but
you would love it.
Yeah. So there you go. There's that story. Nathan, let's go ahead and wrap this up with two more stories real quick. This one was the San Diego Comic-Con, which 2022, I'll be honest with you, other than seeing Dungeons and Dragons trailer, Honor Among Thieves, which looked like so much fun, I really did not pay attention to anything that happened there. So please fill me in. What happened?
Well, San Diego Comic-Con is back. It was without a lot of visitors, which means the cosplay people are back, which is, by the way, the cosplay is the best thing about the show. Mm-hmm. I could look at it for days. No, just trailers, and most of it Marvel, of course. Most of it Marvel. A lot of it DC. Some of it DC. I sent you a link on some of the trailers, but the big trailer coming out of the show was of course the Black Panther sequel.
Was it Wakanda Forever?
Is that it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There you go. That's. What do you think? Are you excited?
Yes, and obviously they did have some allusion to Bozeman, you know, not being there and mm-hmm. all that good stuff. I mean, you know, and Wakanda is such a and Black Panther is such a weird franchise because, like, honestly, every person that I've seen kind of hate on it is hating on it exclusively for this is pandering to Black culture. And yeah, everyone else is, and everyone else that I've seen that likes it, they're like, this is awesome, this is fun. And people who are really like praising it for, you know, the aspects of Black culture that they do kind of highlight, they're like, hey, look, you know, that stuff we like, what the hell, this is great.
Well, I mean both is true. It's Disney, like it's kind of like when the George Floyd riots happened and you had all those white politicians in Washington dress up in dashinkis and everything and bow. Like, yeah, it's pretty pandering. But at the same point, though, it's in spirit with the comic. It's in spirit with the comic. It's in spirit with the attitude of it. And frankly, if you watched Black Panther, the movie, it was a lot of fun. It was well made. It was well acted. It was more until the final act where it became a mush of CG. This trailer looks pretty good, actually. Yes. I love the color scheme of it. I love the choice of Kendrick Lamar. And I think it's Lens. It's a bold choice to do a superhero sequel when you don't have the hero when he's dead. But it looks great. Ryan Coogler is a great director. There's a lot of spirit in this thing. And it's going to sell like hotcakes in certain communities. And I can tell you, I told you, when I saw Black Panther, the first one, I was actually traveling. I think I met you about a week later. I went through DC. No, I was in North Carolina. I was in a, I was visiting some editors, and full disclosure, all the editors I was visiting were all African American. And we went to go see Black Panther in the blackest city in that part of North Carolina. And I was the only white guy in the theater. I saw trailers for movies I never heard of. I saw advertisements I'd never seen. And then immediately, like 2 days later, we were in DC at the African American History Museum weekend and after its opening. So yeah, I was full there, man, in the midst of it all. And people were excited. And I got to geek out with a 7-year-old grandmother. That's never like, if Marvel could do that, then so be it.
Yeah.
So I have no problem with that.
I will say that my background, I probably would have identified more with the latest Buzz Lightyear film. But you know, which one's more fun? And I do think that, you know, Black Panther and just superhero movies in general, they're just more fun. So, you know.
I've seen both. I've seen Lightyear and I've seen Black Panther, and Lightyear is not worth talking about. So, it doesn't merit that conversation.
Yeah. So either way, there was that one. There are actually trailers here in this article that, ladies and gentlemen, if you're watching the video portion, you can see there. I did not even know John Wick 4 dropped a trailer. So, I mean, that's going to sell like crazy as well. Always does. Sandman. What the heck is Sandman? That's
that's the Neil Gaiman thing. Gaiman. It's another version of Sandman. Speaking of audiobooks, Audible and Amazon had a really big, high production value. There's two chapters of it you can go download. The first one is excellent. Second one, not so much. I've read Sandman. I've seen it all. I don't recognize the trailer very much because it's not really an explosion superhero thing. Right. So the jury's out. We'll have to wait till it comes on Netflix to see. So,
right. So The Rock is doing another Rock film. That's great. Shazam, also good. I Am Groot. I did see that trailer. Cute kids show, not for adults, but you know, that's going to be a thing. She-Hulk, some people did.
I laughed at it. I thought it was funny.
So one thing that I saw, like, you know, either from Twitch streams or just other people's reactions, there, everyone's always drops these things like, why do we have to change the race of this hero? Why do we have to change the gender of this hero? Why do we have to do this, that, the other? Nathan, I feel like you would appreciate this with me, like all these other talking heads don't, where kind of like Marvel movies are, you know, kind of getting to. Comic books have been doing since like the 50s, and like, you know, they had their base storyline, they told a story, they were done, you know, 2 years later when they were done being comic strips, and like they've been doing weird off the wall crap since like the 60s and 70s. Like if you wanted you know, some weird thing where like Superman was a fish in a fish community, like they did that. So when people are like, why do they keep, you know, making female roles of male superheroes, you know, like female Thor? And it's like,
because it's different.
That's what comic
because
books
it's
do.
It's people, because people want what, because they want product. They go into McDonald's, they want a double cheeseburger. They don't want McChicken. And the problem is isn't that they're racist or they feel like they have to be like racially exact. Is because they see it happening on the opposite side. Like, for example, you'll see white characters becoming Hispanic. You'll see white characters becoming black. You'll see male characters becoming female, but you'll never see it in the other direction. And I think Marvel could do a better job with this. And I think DC could do a better job at explaining, well, this is just a take on the character, instead of defending it and saying, well, it's a fake character. The race doesn't matter. Well, the race does matter to Disney because they did it intentionally to open up a new market. Like they're very specifically doing this to generate buzz. And to be fair, Disney has been annoying lately where they'll take two to three Twitter trolls and they'll blow their complaints out of proportion. And most people do not have a problem with this. You know this. Most people don't have a problem with switching a character's gender or a race. They don't have that problem.
Of course not.
It's Twitter. I mean, if somebody says, here's $1 billion, all you have to do is live in a mansion, people would complain. Like, you would find somebody to complain. It just stop amplifying those voices to make yourself look like a hero.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's nothing new. Just get over it.
My only point is that whenever people say, I can't believe they did this to superhero this, it's like, read the comic books, like read the source material. Although, they've probably done a lot weirder stuff. You know,
I will say one thing though. I will say one thing. I did laugh at all the Photoshops of Ryan Gosling as Black Panther. I won't lie to you. That made me laugh.
Yeah.
He's back.
He's back. There you go. So there you go. Comic-Con, a bunch of trailers, and like you said, check out the cosplay as well. I mean, I have yet to go to a PAX or a Comic-Con, but you know that's on my bucket list, is to make it, or even a BlizzCon, which I think is coming back in 2024. So I am looking forward to all of that. But a lot of trailers, a lot of I guess with E3, I guess not really being here. I don't know if trailers would normally make it into E3, but
Comic-Con E3 has a lot of mm-hmm. E3 has a lot of trailers, a lot of fun trailers too. So, but there wasn't any E3 this year, so we had to do all
right. Hmm, that might be my internet, or that might be Nathan's internet, because he's unfortunately on location. So
I'm here.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
The E3 gods got mad at me. So, but no, I was going to say that E3 is usually a lot of fun. Trailers there too. Trailers are fun. Mm-hmm. The trailers are fun. When you go to a movie, you get to see what's happening. Sometimes they're accurate. Sometimes they're not. They're a lot of fun. And Comic-Con, that's what it's become. It's become a trailer machine and cosplay right. machine. And for comic book fans, they're probably not really happy about that. They probably wish it was more comic oriented, but that ship has sailed. So sorry.
So I will close this kind of thing down just a little bit by saying that the one show that I keep hearing about that I'm actually interested in, because the memes are on point and there's so much, like, I don't know, there's so many people who seem to be enjoying the show that I never really got into it, but I might at this point, mm-hmm. is The Boys.
How much time you got?
Hopefully enough for everything, but season 3 seems to be really popular lately.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's tied with my favorite show on TV right now, to be honest with you. The other one being What We Do in the Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
The Boys is everything that Marvel's not.
Right.
But instead of just being cynical, it's actually smart. It's well written. It's extraordinarily well acted. The breakout star, of course, is Homelander. I don't know the actor's name. He's from New Zealand. He is meme friendly. The guy has a face that you want to punch. there's what's really funny about it is on the last. No, I'm not going to spoil anything for you. But on the last episode, there's a scene when he introduces his son. I'm not going to say how and why. And somebody tries to hurt the son, and he explodes the guy, pops him like a grape with his heat vision, and he thinks, oh crap, what have I done? I've revealed myself to be the bad guy. But the crowd cheers, and he's got this look on his face. He's like, oh my God, I can do anything.
That's become a huge meme I've been seeing. Yes, yep. Where he's like, all right then.
Yep, we can finally get this show on the road.
Yeah.
The Boys is utterly fantastic. It's offensive. It's everything we talk. You know how you said Black Panther kind of panders a little bit to the black community? And that's true.
Yeah.
The Boys panders to everybody. It is shameless, and it knows it. And I can't describe anything on the show because this is a family show.
Mm-hmm.
But it's on Amazon. It's the best show on Amazon by leaps and bounds.
There you go.
And what's really funny about this?
Mm-hmm.
You know who was really fun? Hideo Kojima, the guy who created Metal Gear, right?
Is he not in prison for assassin? No, total joke, by the way. Yeah. Do not. No.
No. Yeah. He was mistaken for the assassin of Shinzo Abe.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Which if you think about it, it kind of makes perfect sense. But he's big on Twitter, and he loves The Boys, and he loves Stranger Things. And mm-hmm. he was one of the first people to point out that, Paul Reiser. Remember Paul Reiser from the 80s, from mm-hmm. Aliens? He's on both shows as completely different characters. And it's fantastic. Like there's so much good television on right now that's better than it's ever been. If you're not finding something to watch, you're not looking hard enough. There's great stuff out there.
Right. There you go. So all that good stuff. Let's end the show here, Nathan, because we're already over the hour, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But we're going to wrap this up. The last topic is going to be the State of Gaming, July 2022. Ooh. This is a monthly podcast that you, Herman, and of course,
rhymes with Maury.
Yes. Okay, I just want to say a name that has not. Yeah, it's Corey Geller. I was in my head. I had another name that I'm not going to say. But wow, some pathways are just
well.
Super...
Look, it doesn't rhyme with Mason.
Yeah.
So.
Yes. There you go. So the state game, July 2022. You know, some of the games that we already talked about: Stray, Xenoblade Chronicles 3. Which, by the way, I've been watching some gameplay of Xenoblade Chronicles 3.
Big game.
I'm clearly not a fan of the genre. Like, the one thing I will say is, like, this the very beginning, like any other Japanese RPG, you know, they have you fighting bunnies or bunnets. And in my mind, I was like, these kids that are raised in a militaristic society that from the day they're born, almost like Sparta, they are trained to fight and kill. They're in a squad of four with giant weapons. And it takes all four of them with super coordination to take out a little level two bunny. And I'm like, what kind of training and why bother?
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
Going back to Wakanda for a second, I actually met people that thought Wakanda was a real country. I've actually met people, I swear to God, hand on heart, truth. I actually met people that thought Japan was like what you just described. Because all they did was watch anime, like Neon Genesis Evangelion and stuff like that. Yeah. And they actually thought that was real. And so it's a huge thing in Japan. You know how it is. Teenage angst coupled with mecha robots, giant swords and ears.
Because who else do you want manning your weapons in your military than angsty 14-year-olds that have a lot of problems, you know?
It's Orson Scott Card couldn't have written it better. But I'll say this. People love this series. It's a huge genre series.
Yes.
Like I said, Nintendo's been hitting out of the park with these things. The fact is that a giant mega game like this to just come out and not get like a game like Stray could get more attention, but I guarantee you Xenoblade will outsell it. Like people, like it's interesting that we have such diversity in the gaming world. And so I think it's great for everybody that you can have all this stuff at the same. I mean, look at that list. There's so much diversity on this list just for this month. It's crazy.
Power Washing Simulator. I did see that too. In fact, I even had to, because I couldn't afford Power Washing Simulator, I actually had to go do the real life facsimile of Power Washing Simulator yesterday in my own home. Or at least on my
Power
own property.
Power Wash is on, I think it's on Game Pass, by the way. So if you have Game Pass, you can try it out. I think that's why it's a big hit, though. I think it's been out for like a year on PC, but I think it's finally on console now. So there you go.
Right. Yeah. Power Washing Simulator. Like it's almost like a Euro Truck Simulator where it's like, oh, you can pretend you're a truck driver and you actually do everything a truck driver would do. Thing is like, why would you pay and do someone else's job and not earn money?
Kmart. I'm telling you right now, man, you asked me how to solve the VR question. There's the answer right in front of you. Like, you just need to find all these disparate little genres and make it work in the other one. That's how you solve the VR problem. But no one's, it's just sitting right there.
That's how you solve the labor shortage, is that you turn all of the jobs that you need filled into video games, release them, and have robots on the other end doing what the gamers are actually doing in real life.
You laugh, man, but these simulator games, like, there's so many of them. Train Simulator, Amusement Park Simulator, Goat Simulator, whatever.
Let's
face it,
Stray is Cat Simulator.
It's pretty much. It's just Power Wash Simulator. You know what? Go for it. Wash away.
Absolutely. So there you go. And everyone, you can, of course, listen to that over there on popzar.com. We'll have a link to that in the show notes, which should be up here momentarily. But with that, Nathan, I think we're going to have to wrap it up there because, you know, I could talk to you all day and you could, I'm sure, do the same. But you have stuff you need to do. I have stuff that I should probably do, but probably won't even get around to it. Everyone, thank you so much for tuning into the program today. We hope you had fun. And hey, every last Friday, as you could tell, even though this is the first Monday, but every last Friday of the month, you can find more Nathan Evans, popzar.com right here. So until next time, everyone, have a great day. Thank you so much. Have a good one. Bye-bye, everyone.
All right, guys. Bye-bye.